wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake for our two-part Christmas special.
Do we call them Christmas? I feel like we have the same discussion.
We have the same
discussion. We call it holiday special, Christmas special.
It's our Christmas show. We always do a Christmas show. I think, and I want to say this, we've probably had this discussion over the years. I feel we're very traditional in that way. And too much modern media is no longer traditional in that when Christmas rolls around, we like to do a Christmas show.
Okay.
Well, I think that's sort of...
I just don't remember what we called it technically. I'm not really making a big point.
Okay. All right. So anyway, this is our Christmas show. And this year we are doing something called a Big Fella Movie Christmas. And this idea came about, I guess we should share the conceit of our idea with the listeners.
Well, why don't we call up Cam?
Spike guest Cameron.
And then explain what Big Fella Movies was. And then we can explain how this plays into our show.
All right, let's get him on the phone.
Okay.
On the line with us for our Christmas special, our Big Fella Movie Christmas special, is Spike Guest Cameron, who hasn't been on the show since he's... And Spike Guest Cameron, I want you to know, you're the only person to have been in the basement studio with us.
Yeah, well, he's also the only...
Yeah, and I believe Eric had the data that it is the lowest performing show in... I don't know if it's in history, but let's reach for such great... I would say depths or heights, but yeah, let's go for it.
We always mention Spike Guest Cameron for being a guest full of spite, but in real life, he's also a very successful entrepreneur, which is why we wanted to talk to you about your creation back in the 90s, Big Fella Movies. Explain a little bit the conceit of your idea and how it came together.
Yeah. Yeah. I really don't know. I mean, honestly, I'm like, what was I thinking? Zess and I have been friends for a long time. We were known for, between each other, known for one particular physical feature, and it was our stomachs.
Yeah.
We had a propensity to consume extraordinary amounts of food.
Yes.
Do a bike ride in upstate New York and then have a five-person Chinese dinner right after that.
Yeah, yeah.
A five-person dinner with two people.
With two people.
Exactly. And then and the bellies would just, you know, by the end, they're just this gigantic protrusion of a stomach. So you know, we would have said, hey, how's your big fella? Oh, my big fella's pretty good, too. So that's the stomach part, and then we both enjoyed movies. So why not put those two together and make a business out of that? And that sounds ridiculous. Why? Because it really is ridiculous. And that was the genesis of Big Fella Movies.
Now, do I have it right? Like, so I pulled up, and people who know that the Wayback Machine is part of the Internet Archive, and you can pull up archived copies of pages, and they don't do it continuously, but judging by it, it has like your first appearance of BigFellaMovies.com with content in 1999, and then the last in 2003. And nowadays, if you go, it actually shows some appearances later on, but they're... Somebody must have stolen the domain name because it just shows like a parking page.
Oh, really? Oh.
But, well, there's a whole thing about the website URL. I had bought bigfellas.com, and we got sued over owning that name.
Oh, we did?
yeah, you missed out on that.
That's used to me, yeah.
My buddy who was hosting the page... We got sued by a men's clothing company in Ohio claiming that they own the trademark, which is total BS. But my buddy who owned the hosting company just caved when he got the letter.
Uh-huh.
He's like, oh, my God, they're going to sue us. So we got to give it up. And I'm like, what are you doing? And before I knew it, he'd given up the URL to bigfellas.com. And it wouldn't surprise me if Big Fella Movie, someone took that as well.
Yeah,
well,
I figured it probably expired. But if anybody who's looking for the picture, the first one, it doesn't, they don't always have all the graphics, but the last one has the illustration, the sort of cartoon illustration with the Big Fella.
Yes.
And the guy holding the pizza in one hand.
That is the Big Fella. That is the Big Fella Buddha.
Clearly a videotape case, by the way. It's not a DVD by any means.
Well, again, I want to give a shout out to Spike Guest Cameron. This idea came at the dawn of the mass user internet.
Mostly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to have a go at Al Gore and that British dude who claimed to have invented the internet, but Big Fella Movies came about when everyone was first getting there. Oh, I've got internet. And it was a thing to have internet. Mm-hmm. So this is an idea almost as old as the internet itself, which also means as old as VHS.
Yeah, I know that's true, but it's nice to think about it that way. I thought it was up before 99.
It could be. Like, that's what I see. The archiving thing is kind of swept inconsistently, so it may not have found it initially when it was there. But did you do the cartoon illustrations, or did somebody else do this?
No. I was an internet professional way back in, lately, even before that. So I knew lots of designers and technology people, and this one guy I knew was a really good designer, and he just had a blast putting the designs together.
Yeah, unlike Zeph, who used a student to like do our logo.
Yeah,
$50 worth.
So obviously the idea was, you know, the folks could basically message. I'm trying to, because this shows how long ago it was. So anyway, the Cameron created a website with movie reviews on it, and my job was to write these little 4 or 5 line movie reviews.
Yeah, you were more about content.
I was technology. More about content. Yes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we would pick, just it started off with, like, we'd bounce back ideas of our favorite movies, and I'm like, oh, I love that movie, and we'd write a little 4 or 5 line review, and the movies were all categorized into sort of different areas, if I remember correctly. Like, for example, there was like a section of like, hey, these are your romantic comedies, or hey, these are like action films. Because obviously, if you were the sort of person now, and again, there's a whole generation who have no idea what the video store was. When you wander into your local video store, everything was grouped by genre, and you'd go for a movie. But the gimmick was, we would also recommend what you could eat.
So I pulled up just for sake of, you had a category of actors being cool.
Yeah, and, so click on
and
that.
And one of the movies is Cool Hand Luke, and it says, you know, if you like this movie, you might like The Hustler, Shawshank Redemption. And recommended meal was Black and Steak. Steak because Steve McQueen plays your traditional American tough guy, cool dude. That steak must be blackened because of the big car chase.
You're reading Bullet.
Well, you know what? I'm not actually. I'm reading Cool Hand Luke. Oh. Again, maybe an archiving problem. So, a good point. The either
but don't get hung up on those details.
Yeah, yeah. But it is a page. Exactly. It says Cool Hand Luke, but you know, and has a couple of quotes from the thing and all that kind of jazz. But you've got at least this is the last, the 2003. So this is probably your maximum where you had looks like 30 movies just under the
just
actors
in that
being
section,
cool
yeah.
section. I do remember you guys used to have like double bills where, you know, if you're going to do two movies
well,
at
I'd,
one time.
I'd, forgot, oh, yeah. I'd forgotten that. Yeah, that yeah. Part of it too is we would recommend, if you like this movie, you might like that. And to be fair, all of that, you know, all of us have Netflix. What's the first thing that Netflix does now when you click back in? Yeah. You know, because you watched, you know, I don't know.
It's just they use algorithms instead of Zeph and Cam.
Well, exactly.
But hey, the end result.
There's artificial intelligence behind it versus two fat dudes.
And you know something?
You might like this.
Those two fat dudes provide a personal human connection, which the internet algorithms cannot do. So
we did.
So after creating the website, and again, I say you created it. I was basically just a hired hand. You also had the idea that people could sort of ping a message to get a live recommendation. Can you talk about how that worked in an age where I think I just had a page, I think, back then? I can't remember now.
Right. Well, it was the Big Fella Buddha.
That's
you
right.
You could contact the Big Fella Buddha, and he would sit there, take your question, and hopefully it was a movie-related question, and then he would answer your question. And it wasn't what was your question, but like, what kind of movie would you like to watch? And then he would throw back a recommendation. So what I did was I set up a phone line in my house and you could call the big fellow Buddha, leave a message, or else if I was at home, I would actually pick up in with a really, really bad accent and then field the question and answer back with a recommendation. So, yeah, we were really pushing the boundaries of customer service and, on-site delivery of recommendation.
Now, how come you never monetized it? This is what I don't understand.
Yeah, good question. So we had up to like 40,000 people a month coming to the site. Wow. Which in
really?
In
wow, 90, my God.
98, 99, that was sure. Pretty darn good. I had this one guy, so I had a guy say, hey, I'll give you money to advertise on your site. About 15 minutes before that conversation with that dude told me how his boss had pissed him off so much that he knew guys who could do something to his boss. And so when he told me about offering me money to advertise on the site, I was like, yeah. And this is when I lived in Chicago. So these type of events are not uncommon. Yeah. Yeah, I know people who know people. I really didn't want to get involved with people who knew other people who could do things to other people.
I'm trying to think if that wasn't an offer. Maybe that was an outright shakedown and you just missed it.
I don't really know. You know, I'm oblivious to such things, Eric. So
if somebody came to me and said, hey, don't you need some protection? I'd be like, from what? I'll never see you later, you know?
Right. See, I don't know these things, so I just kind of took it as, oh, that was a nice offer. I really don't want to get shaken down later, so we'll just avoid all advertising. So
I tell you what, if they
that was the best we got as far as monetization.
If they had the Google advertising that they do now, you know, it's still kind of a ripoff, but you could plug and play it. You easily could have 40,000 visitors. Totally have thrown that in there.
Well, in 99, 40,000, I mean, we could have turned that into, hundreds and hundreds or millions of
instead
users.
Of,
but our content guy who wrote the content got a little bored. He didn't really find this to be that interesting. And so between that and losing the URL because we're getting sued by Large Man Clothes Company, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of dynamics in this very small internet company. I just couldn't hold it together.
Can I ask you a question? I mean this in all seriousness now. Because I know you and I have had many discussions off air about you're a cord cutter in terms of you taking all your entertainment via Netflix and YouTube. You know, you're sort of done with basic cable, and we've had those conversations here on the show. Is there a part of you that sits back and goes, yeah, this was an idea ahead of its time? Like, if someone big time got behind this now, do you believe this is an idea that has some traction in it?
What, the big fella movies?
Yeah, like hey, click on the internet and find a film to watch and what you should eat with it. Like, have your whole evening planned out for you.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I have no idea.
I think it demands too high of an
attention. It was more of an entertainment site before. Right. So, you know, if we were going to sell it and actually just cash out on it, it was probably 99 and 2000. But things are so sophisticated today. No, I think it's just there isn't that much pure entertainment that's out there that people would enjoy. At least my view. I have no idea. Once the site died, I was done with it too.
Yeah. So while you know, this is news to me that there was the potential for us to be sued way back then. I'm now going to lay it out there that the Atlantic Voice is going to take this idea on this show and maybe give you an opportunity to sue back. So,
I can't wait. It's my chance. All right, and since Eric's a lawyer, I mean, this is going to be fantastic. It's going to be toe to toe.
So before you go, I'm going to put you as an original big fella Buddha. I'm going to put you on the spot now. What's your favorite Christmas movie?
Favorite Christmas movie? I've got a few.
Okay.
So Elf is one.
Oh, it's a big Eric favorite.
Yeah. And what's the Dan Aykroyd, Eddie Murphy movie?
Oh, Trading Places.
Trading Places.
That's probably my number one. My number one Christmas movie.
All right, so your number one Christmas movie is Trading Places. What would you sit down if you were parked on here in the New Basement Studio with us in front of the studio's big screen, and we decided to kill some time watching Trading Places, what do you believe we should eat? And obviously, when I say eat and drink, but I would say, you drink orange juice. No, go, do it. Hit us.
So have you, if you guys are familiar with when you go to like a state fair, they sell turkey legs. We're not talking about you baste a turkey and then you take off the leg. They just sell these big honking dinosaur sized turkey legs.
Yeah.
That's to me that and then you have like cranberry sauce and maybe some mashed potatoes on the side that you dunk your turkey leg into.
Oh,
because
okay.
You're kind of recreating the Dan Aykroyd. He's a Santa Claus, but kind of drunk and a bum, and he's trying to eat it through his fake beard. Well, you don't have to do the whole fake beard part, but you're doing the turkey leg, and you're dunking, and it's a little sloppy, but it all is still turkey, lambasted together, and you eat it all.
So traditional Christmas dinner, but eaten caveman style.
In a very different way.
Yeah. And all washed down with orange juice, which of course is Trading Places.
Orange juice.
This is what we did.
So, Spike Guest Cameron, obviously you are a Spike Guest, but we're still going to wish you season's greetings.
Yeah. Do I still deserve the moniker Spike Guest?
No, this was not a very spiteful interview.
I haven't been
spiteful
towards your show in a while. I just haven't listened in years.
Well, that's
spiteful. I just didn't really enjoy the show. So I don't know what to say. Am I really a Spike Guest or? Maybe I'll never lose that, and that's okay.
How about uninterested guest of the show? Is that better? I'm uninterested.
Well, I think that's where I am now. I'm not spiteful. I'm just not really interested.
Okay, fair enough.
You give us six more years, we'll grow on you.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Merry Christmas, old buddy.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a great Christmas.
Thanks.
All right, so there you go. Thanks to Spike Guest Cameron, the original BigFellaMovies.net or .com. And again, we talked about it a lot. We will place links up on the blog, so you can click on there and go to the Wayback Machine, which I know is something that you use quite a lot on the internet.
I wouldn't say quite a lot, but when called upon to find something from 20 years ago on the internet, that's where you got to go.
Right. All right, so
you can actually go there and like look at Amazon's website when it was first set up.
Really?
And all these sort of like things that we think of as very customary now, and see like the half-baked versions that started.
What was the half-baked version of Amazon?
Yeah,
and again, it was
a
Christmas season of presents. We can talk about
what year it was, but it was a much simpler version. So you can just... So
look like
somebody,
Craigslist.
Once people go look at BigFellaMovies.com's archive pages, they can explore all the websites that they're curious about the past.
All right.
You can see like what AOL's websites look like or something like that.
I am trying to think of like back in the day what some of those things looked at. But again, if you want to know about the past internet, I think we did a show in 2017, which... goes into the past of the internet. And I will link that on the blogs. You can just click on that. Yep. All right. So
what does this have to do with this year's episode? Well, you know what we decided. I think we actually decided and then realized it was similar to BigFellaMovies.com. We've done episodes before, and if people want our full treatments of songs, movies, foods, all kinds of various things having to do with holidays. We've done those in years gone past, and you just don't want to do the same thing all over again. So what you do is you recut it a new way. And what we each are doing is bringing to the table some packages, like call them versions of the holidays, where you'd have, you know, something to eat or drink, listen to some music, sit down and watch a movie. And what would be a suitable matched package of content and consumption for you and your friends, or family.
Because to our point here that we made before we spoke to Spy Guest Cameron on the phone, this is a Christmas show, but ultimately there's really only one style of Christmas show. Do you know what I mean? Like there's only three original ideas in Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
A Christmas show, you know, if you watch the Christmas episode of Friends or whatever, invariably someone gets a turkey stuck on their head. But that's also Mr. Bean's stick in his Christmas show. Do you know what I mean? So that's what I'm saying. Christmas specials ultimately... they're just the same old thing. And so we're doing the same old thing, but repackaged.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we'll hit on some new ideas, but, you know, give us a chance to explore some of these movies more quickly. Like I said, a lot more.
All right, so for our Big Fella Movie Christmas, over the next two, the rest of this episode and the episode after, we're going to give you a movie. We're going to give you a song and some food or drink as you have your Christmas experience, as you desperately try to entertain everyone who's stuck over at your house.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's get going. Round one, do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
You go first.
Okay, and I think it's important. We actually tried to come at each other blind this year, meaning that we did not. Normally when we do these shows, we always go back and forth with ideas, and are you going to do this, and are you going to do that? But this year we kind of didn't. And I remember when we did First Albums, which is one of our highest ranked shows, I think from 2017, where we both created a list of first albums. We had no idea what our partner was going to produce until we sat across from each other. That said, in classic counterculture fashion, I've not done traditional Christmas movies, although I think I will with my last film make a case for a traditional Christmas movie, whereas you've done films that people think of as Christmas.
Right.
But I'm going to explain, as I'm going to lead off.
Do you want to, I mean, you can do it however you want to.
Let me do the film first, and then I'll say
what I picked. I'm probably going to, when I do mine, I'm probably going to state my packages before I go on to everything, but you can do it either way. So you just have to cue me as to what we're doing.
Okay, so, well, I'm going to cue you in a moment with our first clip, but for me, a Christmas movie isn't necessarily a movie about Christmas. It's the kind of movie that you associate with the Christmas season. And I've always felt that Christmas is sort of musicals and, do you know what I mean? Like, hey, the musicals tend to be feel good.
Because you're now sounding less like indeterminate middle age and indeterminate old age, but
yes,
go on, please.
Yes, so musicals. And of course, you know, everyone watches The Sound of Music at Christmas, right? Or Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. And yet, I decided to pick another film that's a musical that I'm going to tie into the Christmas season, and then you're going to sit there and go, this makes perfect sense. So in 1968, the best picture, I think, for 1968, because it won an Academy Award, was the musical Oliver with an exclamation mark. And it is a musical version of Oliver Twist.
All right, so I'm going to go.
You're staring at the pocket handkerchiefs, eh, my dear? Yeah. We just hung them up, ready for the wash, that's all.
Is this a laundry then, sir?
Yeah, that's right, a laundry!
Exactly, my boy. I suppose a laundry would be a very nice thing indeed.
But is that David Niven?
No, someone called Ron Moody.
A little better, don't it, boys?
Not all right.
You see, Oliver, in this life, one thing counts.
So here we go, we're now in a musical.
Yeah, they get right into it.
These don't grow on trees. You've got to pick a pocket or two. You've got to pick a pocket or two, boys.
You've got to pick a pocket or two.
Do you know anything about the history of the original Oliver Twist musical?
It was originally a stage show.
Yeah.
But this is the movie version that was brought to life by the director Carol Reed, who'd done a lot of like Broadway, the Ealing films, the old sort of Alec Guinness knockabout comedies and stuff like that. Anyway, you're listening to Gotta Pick a Pocket or Two. Turn it down a little bit, because I can't hear myself think. You just let it play.
Is the music in this, I mean, meaning like, was this a musical plays just translate over? Did they do the songs up for the movie?
I think it was a mix. I mean, that's never changed.
Right.
Some, I think, but this is an original song, and another one we're going to play later. This is Gotta Pick a Pocket or Two. And of course, one of the first ones was Food Glorious Food.
Right.
Which I should have picked, really, considering the conceit of Big Fellas, which is you pick a movie and something to eat with it.
Right.
Which is Food Glorious Food. So anyway, Oliver starred as Oliver, a chap called Mark Lester, who did a bit, you know, one of these kid actors. And I did some research, and he acted on into the 70s. He was in the movie version of Black Beauty, did a couple of other things, but actually then got out of acting and is now a trained acupuncturist.
Okay.
Right, but here's the interesting thing.
I mean, 68 if he's a youth, so he's got to be late 50s.
Yeah, he's got to be. I didn't print up that page about him, but here's the interesting thing about him too that I found in reading his Wikipedia page. So the chap that played Oliver in this Oscar-winning movie as a little kid, he went on to be a buddy of Michael Jackson.
Okay.
And apparently, he was a sperm donor for Michael Jackson.
I don't really know what I thought.
Why not? I don't have that Wikipedia page open right now, but I suddenly dived into it like, oh, what's all this about? He was a buddy of Michael Jackson, and apparently Michael Jackson had a collection of sperm in case he ever wanted to have kids.
Well, but he did have kids. But they were his, I think, right?
Well, that was the thing. But Mark Lester claims I was a sperm donor for Michael Jackson.
Okay.
And then doesn't say anymore, which that all of a sudden puts...
Truly tangent.
What is it? And when you get that sort of tangential information...
I mean, it has to do with orphans or something.
It suddenly puts everything to do with Oliver way on the back burner. Because it's not interesting compared to someone who is a sperm donor for Michael Jackson. Anyway, the thing was like the eighth highest grossing movie of that year.
Yeah,
it won a couple of Oscars.
Kind of insane, really.
A couple of the other songs are famous. Like I say, Food, Glorious Food. You've Got to Pick a Pocket or Two. And then another one that we're going to play shortly. It also starred a whole load of English actors. Oliver Reed, Ron Moody, who's doing the singing there, who was a big stage performer at the time. A chap called Harry Secombe, who was a famous English singer. He was also the original member of the Goons, which was the radio forerunner of Monty Python. Did I mention Oliver Reed? And then the female lead is someone called Shaney Wallace, who I'd never heard of. But she was, again, a big stage performer. And what's interesting about this, like I said, it came out in 1968. What's interesting about it is now when they do movie musicals, they get film stars to sing. Right? But back then, they found stage people to basically stick them in the movie, which is slightly different. I mean,
like
to
actors.
But you know what I mean? Like now, like what was that version of Chicago that won all the awards? That didn't have anyone who did it on stage. It had, you know, Richard Gere and Renee Zellweger and all these sort of people in it. And that seems to be the modern trend. But all those old musicals of the 60s had loads of people who were only famous for being in musicals.
It's really like a Pink Floyd song.
Yeah. Can we fight? Can we beg? Can we borrow all cash? But there's nothing to stop us from getting a thrill when we all close our eyes and imagine. I want to sing along right now. There you go. Now, Dick. I mean, have you ever watched Oliver all the way through?
No.
But you've heard this song before, right? There you go.
I've even heard the Pick a Pocket too. Sure, I've heard a bunch of these songs. But I think...
So I'm not going to tie it into Christmas.
I think we might have done that play in elementary school or something
like
that.
Really? I'm going to tie it into Christmas because obviously Oliver Twist, the book, was written by Charles Dickens.
Something like some starvation they tie into Christmas.
Well, there you go. Charles Dickens wrote the original Oliver Twist. Charles Dickens, of course, wrote A Christmas Carol with Scrooge. And let's face it, all his books are kind of the same, right? People in Victorian England, people are either poor or orphans, and then they all come good. These are all basically the same thing. So Oliver could easily have been a Christmas story if he'd done it that way, but he'd already done a Christmas story and he had to do something different. So I'm going to make the case that actually this is Charles Dickens' lost Christmas story. Because if you put this on stage and put everyone in a Christmas hat, it embodies everything about the season. The orphan, he finds his family.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so if they had a Christmas celebration when they found each other, that'd be...
Yeah, you go. Well, no, but it is full of the sentiments of Christmas. Well, because I'm not going to be entirely serious now. People always watch The Sound of Music at Christmas, right? But that's not a Christmas movie.
I don't know if they do.
It's just set in the Alps with snow and stuff.
I'm not sure if people always watch the...
Well, I think they do. Okay. Didn't NBC do that thing a couple of years ago where they did the live Sound of Music at Christmas? Who played... what's her name? The singer?
I mean, I guess it's holiday season generally, but I don't think of it as a Christmas thing. I seem to remember it would come on like right at Thanksgiving weekend or something like that.
That's the same thing. Christmas season, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. How literal are you going to take your Christmas?
That'd be Wizard of Oz maybe came on then. I can't remember.
Right. Wizard of Oz, another one. But that's not Christmas.
No, it's not.
Right. But what I'm saying is we associate these sort of shows with the Christmas season.
All right.
So that's why I'm making the case for Oliver. So like I say, Oliver the musical. The song I'm going to go with it is actually one of my favorite songs. But do you want to play that now?
Whatever
cue it up,
like.
Play it now.
I don't remember what it is.
And if I need to kill time talking about what you're going to eat with this. And I'm actually going to make a case for what I'm going to serve up alongside us as we sit together and watch Oliver.
Sure, I should hope so. I mean, you're supposed to tie them all together somehow.
I'm going to give you a bowl of porridge.
But
oats. Because you know something? You're doing all that other eating during the Christmas season. You need something a bit bland. with some fiber to help you get through. This is my favorite song out of everything in this one.
Okay.
Yeah. Comes towards the climax of the movie, actually, where the female lead is Oliver Reed's girlfriend, but she's helping Oliver to escape the clutches of the pickpockets to go and live a better life.
Okay.
And this song is Papa. And so she sings a solo.
Not to be confused with A Papa Umau Man.
Yeah, that's a different one entirely. Different album. So this song, Papa, she is in a tavern and she sings. And of course, in traditional musical number, everyone in the tavern is starting singing and they're jumping on the table.
Just like a bunch of orphans were singing Foo Fighters.
Right. Exactly. Well, that's what happens in musicals. Yeah.
Everyone knows, they all suppose what they want to suppose when they hear Papa.
So what is she trying to distract people? What's going on?
She's trying to distract everyone so that the kid can escape with Fagin, I think. And Oliver Reed is bullying them all with his pit bull.
Okay.
To make them all work for him. But this is a classical musical number that it builds and builds and builds, and then 40 people are singing and dancing, and of course it's got a catchy tagline. It's, you know, Papa. I'm ready to Papa now.
What is the cause of his red shiny nose?
Rudolph?
There you go. Can you not see you and I holding a tankard of ale and singing Oom Papa together?
Do you have two tankards?
Not on me, but I could easily get them.
I had also grabbed, when you had put this on there, I had grabbed the play version. I don't know if, let's see if it's any different or worth the time of spending there. But, of course, I'm not. There we go. So
you found why, like the original.
Well, I guess it's
Broadway,
the, yes, the original Broadway
version, whatever recordings of the show.
Yeah, I have to jump us in because I think it's a little slow starting. Also, oops, what's going on there?
Singing in the city,
especially when I've been on that gin, all that beer.
I think that's her, though. The same girl who played the character in the movie. Yes, so she was a big stage star.
It's a little clearer than the TV version. So
again, there's nothing more than living a bleak life in Victorian London and thinking about Christmas.
All right.
There you go.
But nothing. Porridge is just saying we have porridge because they ate porridge.
Yeah, I mean, I'd try to tie into the movie, but to be around the Christmas season, you eat so much crap.
Okay.
That at some level, you need something good for you to enable you to survive to the next day of eating so much crap.
Okay.
That's the nature right. of Christmas. You know the things that we're putting in our body over the... I don't want to put the boot into my wife, but she has gone ahead and... Now, decorated, our own home is decorated for Christmas.
Right.
And everywhere is a bowl of Hershey's Kisses. And I'm like, I just don't have the willpower to come into the house and not have one. So we're not even, you know, but I don't know when you listen to this, but we're recording this prior to Christmas. Once we get the other side of the Christmas, I'm going to weigh like another like 10, 12 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Just because everyone's just, hey, it's Christmas.
Leave. Yeah, no, and it's brutal. I mean, we should separate Thanksgiving and Christmas somehow for our own like personal health. Because I guess that's why they put the New Year's resolution in right after those things. So you can try to take those pounds off.
Yeah, so a bowl of porridge. Because again, Oliver's the sort of movie, this is a 45-year-old movie. You're not sitting down in the evening to watch this. You're sticking it in right there. Granddad's sitting there and grandma, and you're going, hey, why don't you watch this? Well, we get ready for our today's activity.
Keep everybody happy.
Exactly. So they're eating breakfast. They're watching Oliver.
It's a good segue into mine.
Let's do it.
My first package here, which I'm going to call Divisive Christmas. I'll tell these ones in order. I'm not going to package them up at one time. So the first thing is the movie is that we'll be watching eventually. We're going to get to that point is The Family Stone, which was the ensemble movie from 2005 with Diane Keaton, Craig T. Nelson, Dermot Mulroney, Claire Danes, Sarah Jessica Parker, Luke Wilson, yes, of the, and Rachel McAdams, among other
Rachel
people.
Rachel McAdams. Ugh, I always do that. There's just something about Rachel McAdams where I go, ugh.
Good or bad? I don't understand the ugh.
I don't know.
Well, I hate her in this movie. Okay. So in any event, this movie is a movie that, speaking about putting the boot in on family members, the other member of the household and other folks in the extended household are fans of, and I am baffled as to why this is considered a good movie. I just watch it and there's so many parts of it that are just mean-spirited. Let me start with a clip, which I think the clip is just, it's been a while since I put it on here. I think it's just the trailer, and I couldn't get, or one of the trailers, I couldn't find a appropriate, like, clips in it.
Wait, meet who?
Yeah. I want you to meet Meredith.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
There's nothing harder than joining a family, especially one like the Stones.
I hate her. She's got this throat-clearing tick. It's like she's digging for clams.
Why do you have to be such a meanie?
They have a funny way of making
so Sarah Jessica Parker plays the sort of outsider who's supposed to get married to one of the members of the family.
Here we go.
She's sweet, right?
She is completely uptight.
I had a dream about you last night.
What was I doing?
Going to get married?
Not if we have anything to say about it.
And that's Rachel McAdams being the big obstructionist to this entire relationship.
Even you.
I just figured you'd give her a hard time.
I've actually seen this film.
And our sister Julie's giving up Christmas to be with Meredith.
And Claire Danes plays the sister who shows up.
Hi.
They certainly like you, don't they?
And of course,
how old is this film right now?
2005, so it's 14 years old.
In the best possible sense, of course.
We will try to behave like a civilized family.
I don't care whether you like me or not.
Oh, of course you do.
Claire Danes, Diane Keaton, Rachel McAdams.
I think it's interesting. Claire Danes is the first one in the trailer, just not the star.
Jessica Parker.
So probably did alphabetical order, didn't they?
Relax.
Maybe.
Try it.
I'm not comfortable.
The Family Stone.
So you say, I'm going to ask you a few questions before you talk.
Yep.
You don't like this movie much, do you?
Correct.
Okay. It's interesting, and I'm going to let you, you know, expound more upon this selection and the stuff that goes with it. But it's a film that I think I've seen, but I've not sat down to watch. Like, it's been on, and I've surfed through it. But you see that cast, and it feels very much like a movie where executives sat around, they had this script, and people are bouncing around. Yeah, let's get Robert Downey Jr.
I saw something that said it was supposed to be...
Let's get Julia Roberts.
Aaron Eckhart at some point is really? The main star, and I forget who the woman... There was a couple of different people that I was like, that would not have been any better.
Well, that's the thing. It's interesting. I do feel it's an idea where people have gone, let's get all these dudes. They couldn't get those dudes, but they roll the movie anyway. They have Diane Keaton, who's kind of a legend. But then you have a lot of people who are not quite A-list and they're not quite B-list. They're sort of in between, like they're just above TV. Well, do you know what I mean?
When was Sex and the City? I mean, I think...
Yeah, I guess in a strange way, that was around that time. So she could claim to have been the hottest star. Right. You know, Craig T. Nelson, as much as we love him,
he's
a TV star.
Right.
And then he was in Action Jackson. That's his lot.
So to be honest,
that's what I'm saying.
It's actually well acted by all these people. Like, it's not like it's not a bad movie in the sense of like, oh, this is stupid or like unbelievable. In fact, it's maybe too believable, but it's just not very nice. And so this woman plays this outsider, and she's very stiff and uptight, and she stumbles into things and saying inappropriate stuff to people who are in the family. But it's so not Christmas spirited. I mean, it ultimately comes around, but it comes around by virtue of the guy who's supposed to be with Dermot Mulroney, who's supposed to be with Sarah Jessica Parker, ending up with Claire Danes. And then,
so who does Sarah Jessica Parker end up with?
Luke Wilson. And like, you know, it's given some extended stuff. I mean, and there's some very, very funny scenes, like where people run around. It's got a certain amount of physical comedy to it. And it's got some very funny stuff with, you know, people, like she gets real drunk with Luke Wilson. They don't do anything inappropriate, but, you know, it's all dancing around. And she's a pretty funny drunk actress, if that makes sense. You know, what I mean? Like acting drunk. She's very funny that way. But it's so mean towards her and not forgiving. And I would be, if I was in that family, I wouldn't want to be home for Christmas. It'd be miserable. Like, and it plays them up like they are the great, such interesting people. You know, it's like one of these rich, interesting families. And, oh, they're so quirky and stuff. I'm like, no, they're jerks. They're just not nice to this woman. I get the fact that the woman is a stick in the mud. But when somebody's bringing back somebody they want to marry, you don't all sit around there.
I'm trying to think if that was before or after the Royal Tenenbaums. Because that's not a Christmas movie. It is a family movie. And everyone's so quirky and funny that you sort of see past the fact that
That one, it seems so unrealistic. Like, this one seems like way real people would mean.
And that's the interesting thing is that, what I'm saying is normally cinema has a way, any kind of drama has a way of sort of blunting those edges to make you feel good about it all at the end. And so I find it interesting that this is a movie where, you know, your reaction is, yeah, these people aren't very nice.
Yeah. So want to point out one thing, because it's going to come in the other movies, 52% on Rotten Tomatoes. So also a critical failure as well. Now, economically, I think it did all right. Nothing like blockbuster wise, but there'll be some contrast from some of the other movies I'll talk about here. So as we're getting up to that point of being seeing the device,
so why did you pick it? So you picked it
because it's a device. Like, some people really quite like it, feel like it's a great Christmas movie, and some of the people don't like it.
Are you sending a message about how you feel about the Christmas season? Because I know I am. At the end of part two, I'm going to say what my message is for the Christmas season.
No, it's part of a package.
Okay.
You know, so that's I really looked for things that were notable movies and packages, which let's get to the second part. As we're warming up for this movie and we're hanging around and preparing to have dinner, which we'll talk about what, you know, the foods we'll be eating in a second.
Okay.
We're going to listen to some music here. And this one I'm just going to have to play to start it off so then we can talk about it. I'm not sure how quickly you recognize it. Sounds nice, right? Nice little Christmas music.
Yeah.
Soothing.
This is God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, right? All Green Sleeves. Didn't we do that one year where these songs, all when you think about it, the rhythm is the same in all of them, yeah. This is like the Siberian Orchestra.
Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Who are the Trans-Siberian?
We're going to talk about it. Okay. I did not know. Like, I heard this, and I'm going to have to play a couple of the other songs, because as the other member of the household was leaning over my shoulder as I was writing things down and was pointing out, you didn't have to limit this to one song. You just say it's Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Yeah. So this song is technically Christmas/Sarajevo 1224.
What the hell is that?
At Christmas Eve, I guess Sarajevo at Christmas Eve or something like
that. It's got cannons in it? I mean, I don't know. Sarajevo at Christmas doesn't seem like the safest of places.
So, Trans-Siberian Orchestra, which I assumed was like cheesy European pseudo metal types, you know, like Muse.
Yeah, a little bit,
does the British sort of like dense. It's slightly inspired by Queen, but it's nowhere as good, you know, and No, it turns out that this band was formed in the United States in 1996.
So they're not Russian?
No, not European or anything like that. And let me see if I can...
Because I always thought they were like some European band that, you know...
Exactly. A bit like, doesn't it sound like it? Because it...
Sort of like,
you know, they don't sing anything.
Like a faux classical Menudo, where you just get people together and they play under this banner of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. And they don't actually... They never headline anywhere, but they'll show up helping someone out type thing. Or they're the recording, or, you know...
So...
like an almost like an America's Got Talent type act. Do you know what I mean? It's this weird thing.
So Paul O'Neill was the manager and producer, I'm pulling off of Wikipedia here, okay, of a number of rock bands, including Aerosmith, Humble Pie, AC/DC, Joan Jett, Scorpions. He later co-wrote albums by a progressive metal band called Savatage, which I never heard of, and working with these various people.
So it's not the worst resume day. There's some legit acts in there.
And so apparently, like, his record label basically offers him to create some band in 1996, and he has this idea it's supposed to be inspired by, like, Yes and Genesis and be this orchestral rock opera type of thing. He's already planned at the outset he's going to do a trilogy of Christmas albums, and then, like, some other albums, and there's one that's, like, a Beethoven-inspired thing. And it works. Like, they put this thing together in 96, and they immediately go to arenas. He's actually passed away relatively recently, but they immediately end up in arenas, and they immediately are doing all this money on it, and it's succeeding, and there's all these, and we hear it on the radio all the time. And there's obviously, this is why I say it's divisive, I don't like it. I don't know of other people who like it, but I do know people like it because they go and buy tickets to see it live.
I was going to make that.
It's always, whenever you see those nowadays, those modern Christmas light shows on people's houses where they can computerize their lights, it's always set to one of these songs, you know, like, look, the flashing lights on my house.
There is something very manipulative about it in that there's no such thing. Christmas music is ingrained in our sort of psyches. The tunes, whatever, and it's the sort of music where when you hear it, you have a direct connection to how you're supposed to feel at that time of the year. So at that moment, the mere existence of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra is a very cynical and manipulative attempt to cash in on that and make money.
Right.
And it's been very successful, so I'm not knocking it. But you don't sit there and go, this is high art, but then in a strange way, Is there such a thing as high art for the masses, right?
Yeah.
There you go. There's your deep philosophical thought for the Christmas season.
So people may have heard this song. It sounds close to a real Christmas song. But
this is them again,
Canon,
right?
Oh, yeah. Canon in D minor, whatever the heck the, you know, classic composition is. But it's like synthesizers, right? I mean, although they do tour apparently in arenas with an orchestra or something, this doesn't sound like a real orchestra, does it?
Is it the same set of dudes, or is it, is it like this weird sort of like label or name? And
That's what I think.
Is it like Blue Man Group? If they're playing in six different countries at once, do you know what I mean? Or Cirque du Soleil, where it's basically just a whole load of people.
So the first song was from Christmas Eve and other somethings, and this is from Christmas Attic. So.
Yeah, and then the choir from St. Thomas More in the Fields or somewhere like
that. I'm not sure if these are actually words to anything or if they just put them on top of the classic music. And at least this doesn't go into straight like electric guitars, but the last song I'll play, which is from another album, The Lost Christmas Eve, which is it's Wizards in Winter.
And it's like, you can put this on at your party and people are groaning and rolling their eyes, but no one's telling you to turn it off. It's this weird sort of like, it gets it sort of virus-like. It just sort of gets into you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what people always use for the Christmas lights.
Right. And it's of the season, but it's not too secular. Is that the right word? Do you know what I mean?
It's not too religious.
That's what I meant. Yeah. Like, so if you've got a wide variety of guests coming over, you're not offending anyone by playing something too, you know, whatever.
So that's the music they'll be playing while everybody warms up and probably be in a grumpy mood by the time
they get
to the Family Stone movie.
Did you tell us what we're going to eat?
No, we're going to eat is really just got a dessert dish for that, which I need to pull up another Wikipedia page so I can discuss this. What would you think would be a divisive Christmas dessert? Of course, fruitcake.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God.
You know, so fruitcake, you know, again, it's another thing that I don't like, but some people like it, and they certainly are buying it. And there's a lot of varieties, obviously. There's, like, the Italian pinafore.
See, I like that.
Which is another version of a fruitcake.
Because it's mild.
But the one we think of is the one that just sort of a low
spicy
size
with
candied. So the earliest recipes from ancient Rome enlist pomegranate seeds, pine nuts, raisins, and mixed into a barley mash. You know, fruitcakes proliferated all over Europe. Recipes differ greatly. One of the things they mention is candied fruit was apparently like a early invention to preserve fruit,
it. That's,
you know?
Right.
So
yeah.
Like, whereas you couldn't get fresh fruit, we could load it up with sugar and you end up with this candy fruit. And they seem to suggest that starting in the 16th century, sugar from the American colonies created an excess of candy fruit, thus making fruitcakes more affordable and popular. So, you know, the Americans took this thing and I guess made a mess of it all.
Well, you know, to be fair, someone of dual citizenship, there are many countries around the world that are able. I think the Italians in classic Italian style are the only ones to pull it off, because I like the Italian fruitcake. Yeah. There's something milder about it. It's not so spicy or edgy. It's maybe a little bit sweeter. And like I say, the Italians, who are a fashionable culture, they're able to get away with it. But everyone else, you're getting all the stuff, anything that's been preserved.
Well, and I can't remember, like, you know, because some versions of it have liquor in it, so it preserves the bread as an overall. And apparently there are some fruitcakes in the world that are considered like heirlooms, like they'll be handed down to family members and they might be 100 years old and nobody actually eats them. It's just about their preserved fruitcake.
I thought you meant, I was going to ask, did you mean the recipe? And you're like, no, the actual fruitcake.
Yeah, like, so when a fruitcake contains a good deal of alcohol, this is, again, quoting from Wikipedia, it can remain edible for many years. For example, a fruitcake baked in 1878 was kept in an heirloom as a family in Tecumseh, Michigan. In 2003, it was sampled by Jay Leno on The Tonight Show.
Oh.
A 100-year-old cake.
Yeah, and look where his career went. No longer on The Tonight Show. Wasn't that around the same time he was replaced by Conan O'Brien?
There's a 106-year-old fruitcake was discovered in 2017 by the Antarctic Heritage Trust, was described as in, quote, excellent condition and, quote, almost edible.
Can I say something? Fruitcake is like a division of its own. Meaning, if something is edible by fruitcake standards, it may not be edible. But let's face it, there are freshly baked fruitcakes that if you ate, you might feel a bit nauseous. I am always astounded at the continued, because I do think there is some legit fruitcake popularity. Like, it's not like
a
thing like
Americans,
you and I, like, let's give them the
fruitcake. Particularly a joke in America. Apparently Johnny Carson had populated jokes that, like,
but what I'm saying is there's a lot of countries where no, fruitcake is a thing. I mean, again, the Italian version, I would eat that any time of the year.
Yeah.
I actually do like that.
So it's probably not fair to necessarily call it divisive. Probably most people hate the bad one, but they're still giving it. So again, I think it's closer to the Trans-Siberian Orchestra in what it is than it is to the Family Stone. But again, all these things divisive. People on either side.
I don't know. I'm trying to think now.
It's not mean.
I don't know if you put fruitcake on the table for dessert. I'm at your house over the Christmas season. We had a nice dinner. Eric, my friend, what's for dessert? If you just put out fruitcake, then you're being mean. If you put out, go, hey, I've got apple pie. Also got some fruitcake.
Yeah.
Then, I get it. It's Christmas.
Might even try it.
But if you go, I've got some fruitcake, and if I say, is that all you got? And you're like, yes.
Yeah, plus, yeah, then you're actually being mean. You're sort of obligated to eat it, otherwise you're being
a jerk. But here's the thing, I wouldn't eat it.
No, I know, but you'd be mean.
Yes, well, there you go. So, yeah, I think it is, it's divisive. I also think it's can be quite provocative.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so there you go. We have reached the end of part one of our Big Fella Movie Christmas special.
Yep.
You heard from Spike Guest Cameron, and we've done our first two films. Come back during the Christmas season. We'll have part two with some more films and food.
Two more rounds each, I think.
Two more rounds each for your delectation. This has been part one of the Atlantic Voice Christmas special. I'm Zef.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
All right, so we're very conscious that we have your time. So we're doing
I've got nothing to do, so really.
That's fine.
Don't worry about my time.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zef on the Atlantic Voice podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice. 3,000 miles of opinion.